All right, we are live. Hey there, Laker fans. Welcome to another episode of Lakers Detailed. I'm your host, Vinay, with my co-host, Raj. It is Friday night at about 9 o'clock Pacific Standard Time, and tomorrow we play Game 1 against the Denver Nuggets, a rematch of last season. Raj and I wanted to take our time to watch some tape, think our thoughts, discuss our things, and talk about a few of the different elements that we think that we're going to have to see, at least in Game 1. And I think the way that we're probably going to do this is we'll talk about like sort of the things that we would like the Lakers to do when it comes to this Denver matchup, and then also what we think is going to happen with this Denver matchup, at least in Game 1, what we expect to see. And, you know, as we all know, there's going to be some grumbling and bumbling by Laker fans as the game goes on. So I expect the timeline to be completely on fire tomorrow, depending and you know, when Denver goes on a 5-5-5-0 run or something crazy like that, people are going to be going crazy and getting mad at Darvin Ham. But we are less than 24 hours away against for Game 1 against Denver for the rematch. Raj, where's your mood? How are you feeling this Friday night about that game tomorrow?
Oh man, so I'm gonna preface this. I was watching Kings and Pelicans, and it was interesting because that's obviously the game we would have been playing, Vinay, if we had lost. And in my opinion, if Zion was healthy and had his calf healthy, I think we would absolutely be playing that game. And that's another reason why both of us, I think, said you do not want to be in that position, because the Kings, who were, you know, they kind of slowed down as Malik Monk got hurt, but we're a very high powered, volatile offense. And they had like 37 points, Vinay, going into the half, almost going into halftime of that Pelicans game. It just shows, like, number one of my rules is that growth is not linear. This is a Kings team that was a 3 seed last year, home court in the first round, went 7, obviously, with the Warriors, who we took out. They are now sitting at home. They will not be involved in the playoffs at all. So I just think that's an interesting way to kind of frame this, as the Lakers go into a battle with maybe the best team in the league. And you know, I went back and watched Vinay all four of the games, and they were close. Both teams had their runs, of course. We were talking about the Drake and Kendrick thing before we went on. I you know, you said you have no dog in this fight, and
no dog, no pun intended.
I think Drake is up, you know, 2-0 is what I'll say, and I just hope the Lakers can go up. Lakers can go up 1-0 in Game 1.
That's how you involved it in.
But no. Seriously, with the basketball, I think where we should kind of start, these are like two starting fives who I think have as much continuity as any starting fives could have, right? Rui started basically since about January, February. Denver obviously had their starting five last year, and it was cool going back and watching like the starting fives that they are now kind of play each other a year ago, and some of the same kind of issues that we had a year ago pop up still this year, like Rui Hachimura's minutes and all that. Vinay, in Game 1 last year, Rui was a plus 10. It's a game we lost, by the way. It's a game we were down like 15 or 16. Rui was a plus 10 in that game in 28 minutes. So hopefully his minutes go up. But I think the matchup that I'm fascinated with last year, I didn't realize how much the Rui on Jokic, how much we actually, you know, went to that, how much that was a kind of weapon that we use. And actually, it was more successful than I actually remember it being. But I want to start there with you, I guess, the Jokic matchup. Are you going starting tip off? Are you putting Rui on Jokic? Is that your, like, matchup? That's what we went to that about, you know, middle third of Game 1. And I like rewatching the games, it actually was pretty successful. Where it wasn't successful for us is like our offense. Our offense died because we had one of Schroeder, one of Vando on the floor, pretty much, and one of D'Lo on the floor pretty much at all times. And that created our offense. But I thought our defensive, at least game plan, kind of fit there. But Vinay, talk to me. Is that the first, is that your like defensive game plan going into Game 1?
Yeah, I think that is a great place to start. I think my expectation and what I would like are both in line with that observation. I think I like the idea of Rui playing Jokic, just kind of playing him straight up. Rui's a little bit more stout, a little bit more burlier. We don't want Anthony Davis to get into foul trouble. Jokic is good at doing those kind of small things to get silly fouls and stuff like that. Anthony Davis is way more effective against Jokic's passing.
When
he's in that roaming role, he can play off of Aaron Gordon or jump to that corner. I like that. There is a part of this also that where I like the idea, and we talked about it in the last pod, like baiting Jokic, not baiting him, but encouraging him to go play offense. Don't pass it to your teammates. Try and shoot it every single time. We use the Clippers reference from the last time that he played him. And I really, really hope that, I mean, Jokic might be prepared for it, and he's a high IQ guy. He might know what it is that that the Lakers are trying to do. But I feel like that matchup would encourage him to just go and try and play offense. And I like that in the long run for the Lakers, because if he misses, now Rui can just outrun Jokic down the court, or Anthony Davis can outrun whoever his matchup is down the court, or whatever it is. So I'm with you. I like that. I think the Lakers should do that. I think that's a good strategy. I don't think Denver has anything exotic in mind if that's how that matchup plays out. What are your thoughts on it?
I'm asking you a straight up question here, because when I was rewatching these games, and it's a fact, I think this is a question that needs to be answered. Can AD defend Jokic one on one? Like I like that. You know what I mean? He should be I think just if you just throw out the defensive. Obviously, I think both of us believe Anthony Davis is the best defender in the world, at least one or two wherever you want to place him. I think you can separate that from what Jokic does, right? And there's something about him that. He might be the only player in the league that does this, Vinay, and that doesn't matter because that's the guy you're playing. So, who cares his, I guess, place in the league with this? But he goes through AD in a way that I think really hampers our whole defensive identity almost. And, watching that game, watching Jokic, one of the guys that actually goes through AD's chest. And Sabonis does this to an extent. It's more off handoffs and stuff like that. But Jokic, literally, there will be a clear side. And if there's no double, he will go right through him. And obviously, AD not wanting to pick up fouls is a separate part of this. Just, I think that's a question the Lakers are going to need to answer. And there's going to be points and places where obviously AD is going to defend Jokic. Basketball is a flow sport. It's not, 2K where you have one-on-one matchups at all times. There's going to be screens and all that going on. I think that's a question that needs to be answered early on, and what defensive game plan you go to, right? I think it's much harder if you have AD guarding Jokic right away. It's one-on-one, Jokic is scoring, and now you have to kind of adjust to that. I think that's a tough place to be, so I would start with Rui, I would start with LeBron, I would, at least try to put AD on separate places and, use him as a helper. But, putting that question to you, can AD guard Jokic in single coverage this series? I think the data says no, and the film says no, but I think that's an interesting place where it just goes against everything, I guess, you just believe, as AD as a player, and this is just 29 other teams don't really matter in this situation, but Jokic is definitely a unique unicorn in this case. But where are you at, I guess, with that idea?
Yeah, let's think about it. I like that question. I think if I had to expand that question, I would expand that question before I answer it, which is, can AD defend Jokic without getting into foul trouble? And I think that's the real issue that the Lakers might have with that matchup.
Sure.
That there's a risk of him getting into early foul trouble just because Jokic does different stuff that can get him in trouble, that could get AD in trouble. I want to ask you this question, and this is a different way of thinking. We've discussed this in one direction, but I want to discuss this thing in a different direction. I want to give you a boxing analogy that comes to mind when I do this, right? So we think of AD and Jokic as heavyweights. But we know that AD isn't really a true heavyweight. He's not built like a true heavyweight. He's somewhere, he's like a tweener, somewhere between a 4 and a 5. Maybe a little bit more to the 4. I don't think many people would disagree with that. But if we think about this from a heavyweight fight, there's a boxing fight or a boxing match that I remember that this really reminds me of. It's I don't know if you've seen it. It was Tyson Fury against Deontay Wilder. And it was the second, I think the first time they fought. Deontay Wilder, I don't know if he knocked out Tyson Fury, but he might have knocked out Tyson Fury. He got him. He's like a big power puncher. Tyson Fury is just a great boxer. But he's a really big dude physically. And the second time they fought, and if any of this is going over your head, just let me know, and then I'll elaborate more. But basically, what happens the second time they fight, Tyson is very careful making sure not to eat punches. But what happens is that when both of those guys clinch, meaning when they get too close and they just basically start hugging each other in the middle of the ring or wherever they're at and stuff like that, Tyson Fury's taller than Deontay Wilder, he would literally put his weight, like you could see him like just kind of resting on the guy. And then I think it's all legal. And again, I'm not a boxing expert, so I'm not going to act like I am. But you could tell that as the fight was going on, it was weighing on Deontay Wilder, like the later rounds, the middle rounds, the later rounds. And, you know, I thought, when I think about this matchup, you know, we've talked about the game of attrition against Jokic. The reason why you want to make him a scorer is because he has to expend more energy. You know, he might not have the conditioning to do that for four quarters, or he might have to extend, like, how, you know, reduce how involved he is for certain parts and stuff like that. I also have to, I think as Laker fans, it's like the a fair thing to do is also think about the level of attrition that AD can handle too as well. The other way. If he has to play Jokic straight up, he's not just defending Jokic, right? He also has to box him out. And that dude is not easy to box out. He's a big dude. And I feel like the Lakers would lose the game of attrition by putting AD on him too much, because I think AD would get worn out faster having to guard him straight up. So obviously we have the part that we just discussed, which is the fouling. But then this other part is that he's like, he'll get worn out. And if in the late game we need AD to hit jumpers, he may not have the legs for it. And so when I think about your question, like the first thing I think of is, can he do it without staying out of fouls? I think he can, but it's going to require him to be really careful, and he may not be his normal defensive self that he is. But the second thing for me also is that game of attrition. I worry that AD will lose that game, and then we won't have him in the second half. We'll get those AD second halves where it's just like he disappeared. What do you think about that? What do you think about that game of attrition between those two players?
Yeah, that's interesting, because I honestly think Jokic's I think his reputation has kind of surpassed him in that. Like, I think the reputation that he's overweight or he's slow or he gets tired, I think that was probably 3-4 years ago, Vinay. Like, I think he's turned into actually one of the more players that can play long minutes, that can very much execute down the stretch, right? And, you know, I don't really recommend Laker fans to do this, but I forgot how many BS shots he hit in the fourth quarter of this series. Like, there were so many. And a lot of those are really taxing ones. They're step back, over the head shots, right? Nuggets are maybe the best fourth quarter execution, you know, team in the league. But I think the AD point is interesting. That's another part that's troubling here when I was rewatching game one. And another thing I forgot, Vinay, was how small we started. We started Dennis Schroeder game one. Not only did we start Dennis Schroeder game one, we then played, we stubbed him out for Lonnie. So we pretty much had this Dennis, Lonnie, D'Lo, and Austin, where three of those guards were on at the same time, pretty much. And yeah, like if you put Rui on Jokic, one of the concerns is the rebounding. Jokic might be one of the best offensive rebounders in the league as well, tips the ball to himself very well. And then obviously you know about his touch. But yeah, like I think asking AD to bulldoze around with Jokic and then also ask him to average 28 points a game in this series, that's probably not realistic. I think we can separate the realistic and from what the ask is. And I think that's the ask. Like, I think that's just what it is. There's no one else on this team that can take that. I think Rui and LeBron should stay on Jokic for most of the quarters. But I think fourth quarter, it's going to be, you know, AD on Jokic. I think Darvin's going to go to that. I think that's the plan for the team. I think it's going to be tough to kind of misstep how the team has played all year. They've kind of put AD on the, you know, best big man and trying to have him maneuver. But no, it's an interesting way to look at it. AD, like, to me, was tired at the end of these fourth quarters, and I'm not sure if he was hurt or not. Game one, he had 40. A lot of that was in the first half. Game three as well, he had a really nice game. I think he had 30 in that one. Again, very tough late game, very tough shots in the fourth quarter. I'm not sure, but I think that's the ask, right? The ask is 80. You have to guard Jokic and drop 28. Is that a fair? Is that an ask that's realistic for him? Is that a fair ask to put him? Or is that something we can't really expect? What do you think?
No, I mean, he has to play. I mean, Raj, okay, let's – this is me and you talking to each other as Laker fans. We're not stands of any specific person. We root for everybody. We know that AD and LeBron took off many, many games this season defensively so that they could get to this point where they could be fully healthy for this. Like, we don't have to lie about what we were watching. Other fans will do it, but we can admit that there were many games that we just kind of mailed in. This is now the time, like, to do it. These are the defending champs. I think you and I have both said that One of the compliments to that Denver team is Mike Malone is probably one of the more tactically, outside of like Eric Spoelstra, is probably one of the more tactically sound coaches in the NBA. Everything he does seems very purposeful with the lineups and the instructions that he gives us to his team. And he doesn't do too much, to my knowledge. He doesn't, from the games I've seen, the Denver runs, he doesn't do too much on just throwing a lineup out there and hopefully it'll work. It's very purposeful. So we don't have margin for error like that against a team like this. And so whether people think it's unreasonable or not for AD to have to put up 25 or 30 and have to play, you know, all defensive team, this is the best player in the NBA. He's going to get another MVP most likely. Like, if you're not going to do it for him, there's no other reason. You know what I mean? Like, if you know, obviously, the Laker fans, I think Austin Reeves did an interview and he said, you know, we do have a chip on our shoulder. We do want to, you know, we know how this worked out and how this stuff also happened. So they want to make some noise against him. Like, this is the one to do it for. Because you and I have both said that I think it gets a little bit easier for the Lakers. Not in the same way, but Denver's the most, probably some of the best execution, late game execution you'll see. A great coach, a world-class, you know, offensive engine in Jokic, a world-class scorer in Jamal in the fourth quarter. Like, if you can get past this really, really difficult hurdle, the playoffs may get, you know, better. So if you're going to fire all your bullets, this might be the time to do it. This might be the round to do it.
Yeah, no, for sure. And so I love that you know, said that Mike Malone is very tactical. Vinay, I think the Lakers need to be very tactical this series. I think this needs to be a very I was watching the games, and where the Lakers went to a lot and where they just couldn't capitalize was, and I want your opinion on this.
Yeah.
LeBron goes player hunting in the playoffs. That's kind of what he does, right? It's very much I'm going to pick on matchups. I'm going to pick on who I can. And the guy that he kind of goes at is Jamal Murray.
Yeah.
Right. And Jamal Murray's not a small guard. He's a thicker guard, but it's still LeBron. I think that should be our entry point offensively. I think that should be our swing. I think that should also control pace. People don't think of Denver as this. Well, I mean, the old Denver, like the George Call Nuggets, right, with this running gun team. This team runs. And one of the issues against this team when I was rewatching the four games, our transition defense was awful, Vinay. Our transition defense absolutely. And this season, it hasn't been much better. I think we're 25th in the league in transition defense. That needs to improve this series. And what Denver does a lot, and we get a lot of cross matches, just the way we defend. One thing that killed us last year was Aaron Gordon would get Jokic would get the rebound, pass it up to Aaron Gordon, outlet to Aaron Gordon, and he would go and just drive on Austin Reeves, on D'Lo, and whoever it is, because someone didn't get back. My question, I guess, just putting this together, AD goes for a lot of offensive rebounds, Vinay. Yeah. And when he does not get them, Jokic might be one of the best defensive rebounders in the league too. This is like when you're the best player in the league, Vinay, you encompass a lot of skills that, you know, you could say he's the best at. But in any case, Jokic will get the rebound. And again, you talked about how maybe, you know, the war of attrition with him, he'll push the basketball. Like and that's part of Denver's offense as well. They don't wait for anybody. They run corner to corner with Aaron Gordon running, sprinting. One of our just barometers with AD is his offensive rebounds. That kind of gets the team going. That kind of gets him going. Is this a series you have to kind of sacrifice that? I know gray line to kind of walk. I rewatch all these games and I'm like, AD's on the other side. And if it's Jokic pushing the basketball, you're dead. That's 2 points. That's 3 points. It's a wide open three for KCP. It's a wide open three for MPJ. It's a wide open three for Jamal Murray in transition. Those are two high percentage shots. But where are you at with that? Obviously you can't tell AD don't go for offensive rebounds. Not like that's not in his blood to not do that. I think when you want to beat Goliath, like you have to do a lot of things that are probably unnatural to you. And I think this is one of them as well, when I was just in my notes here. But where are you at with that, I guess, concept?
Yeah, that's a good question, because generating extra shots is like as good as gold in the playoffs. So I see why like he would continue wanting to do stuff like that. I mean, the easy answer, the political answer is like, oh, he's just got to be more selective. Like, just be selective with when you're doing offensive rebounding. But at the same time, even if he doesn't crash the offensive glass, there's no real guarantee that we're going to stop him in transition sometimes. You know what I mean? Like, because he's still going to be in the paint. It's not like he's going to be out at the three-point line. Like, most likely offensively, he's going to be on that left inside block or somewhere deep in the paint. So I don't know, dude. Like, I want him to continue doing that. And I think the Lakers think, okay, so let's do this. I'll take a step into what I expect them to do. Okay. So game one, I expect him to try and crash the offensive glass like he normally does. I think the Lakers probably think that the best way to slow down the Nuggets is to score shots at the rim. I think I 100% think that's what, unless they're hard doubling AD or hard doubling LeBron or showing that double to LeBron and getting it out to open shooters. I think they think that's the best way to slow down. And that might be true. Normally in basketball, that is the way to slow down a transition offense to do that. So I think that's what's going to happen. But I think all it takes is like two or three possessions at the very most, not subsequent, but maybe within like a 3 or 4 minute stretch, 5 minute stretch, where if you do that and you get caught on a 5-on-4, Denver's going to torch us very, very fast. And I mean, unless we get lucky and they don't make shots, or maybe our transition defense is really good and we force bad shots. But that's it. That's like a danger zone that they have to worry about. Like, that's one of those situations where it's like, as soon as Ham sees that happen more than once, he has to call a timeout and he has to tell him, okay, we're not doing this anymore. Like, you guys are not getting back in time. We can't crash the offensive glass mindlessly like this. Yeah. What do you think about that?
No, absolutely. And it's funny because we forget now because JJ Redick has just taken over media somehow. Like, it's just
yeah.
Right? Like, JJ Redick somehow is the king of media. He's doing shows with our, anyway, that's a separate topic. But so Jeff Van Gundy and Mark Jackson are doing these games, right? Because you forget that they ESPN had the conference finals and those are two. And so I'm watching AD, and he's obviously we have Austin, D'Lo, and I think Dennis out there, and they're killing AD for not getting the rebound.
Yeah,
I'm like, you know, like not keeping them off the glass, right?
Yeah.
And so, and I'm thinking in my head, four people watching, like, you know, and like there's nothing like AD cannot stop Jokic and Aaron Gordon. Yeah. And MPJ, people forget MPJ crashes, like, and Denver's very good at this, right? Whenever MPJ is not involved in like a curl or a floppy action, he's crashing hard. And if you don't put a body on him, like D'Lo's not putting a body on him in any case, or you know, or Dennis or whatever, he comes and crashes. I think that's an interesting part of this too. And on the other end, right, they're killing him in transition defense. But if AD is trying to go get an offensive rebound, he's going to be behind the play. And the Lakers kind of defensive like transition principles have not been good for the whole kind of Ham era. And even in like Vogel's kind of case, sometimes it was up and down, but it's tough to kind of tell AD not to crash. It's just, I think like with Gordon and Jokic, they're two players that are very forceful. And this is where I go back and forth. I don't think, Vinay, you beat force with finesse. Like, you know what I mean? I think these are two players you need to beat force with force, and I think sometimes that is offensive rebound. I think that is crashing. I think that is bumping a guy off, right? Just showing your physicality.
Yeah.
And I think 80 offensive rebounds is where he gets that. It's just our transition defense and our principles and the cross matching are so destructive in the series. It's something I'm heavily looking for in game one, because it's what killed us. We were down like 18 in the first 7 minutes of game one last year, and a lot of that is we started extremely small and we continue to be small, but it's a big part I'm looking at as well. What's another topic you're kind of looking at for game one?
So you know, like, one of the things that I'm also thinking about, like, with game one, and I guess I could pose this question to you, is I think what you said is a nice segue, like, meeting, you can't beat force with finesse. And I think that is a really nice way of describing what we need out of D'Angelo Russell. Like, he had the quote a little bit earlier this week where they asked him, how is he preparing for Denver? And I think it's just his personality. That's just how it is. It's just, it comes off differently when a fan hears it. Like, I saw Laker fans being very upset that the Lakers are still practicing in LA, like on Wednesday or something like that. And I was just like, I mean, you got to give them a day with their families. They're going to go to Denver and be there for like 4 days in a row or whatever. But you know, he said this thing where, you know, he's not really prepping differently. Like, there's nothing different that he's done about his preparation. You know, he's the same guy that he is, but obviously he's taking it more seriously. And I think that, you know, the idea that these guys are approaching this with a chip on their shoulder should already be assumed. And I think sometimes Laker fans expect the player to say that part out loud when it's like, no, like, he knows what happened, you know, like last, like, I don't think these guys are, we saw when we played Indiana in the IST, how mad he was. You know, he was going after Bruce Brown and talking trash to him the entire time and stuff like that. So it's like, it's very clear that he doesn't forget that sort of stuff. And most NBA players don't forget when stuff like that happens to him or the narrative goes against him. But I think that what you said is a good segue, because I think Denver still has the force in their backcourt and they still have the force on their team when it comes to dealing with a guy like D'Lo. I think if it's Jamal or if it's KCP, or if it's, you know, Peyton Watson, if they use him because he can play guard a bunch of different positions, or if it's Christian Braun, who's also a really, really good defender, stat defender, physical guy, they're going to be physical with D'Lo. And I don't think this is my nice way of saying it. I don't think him trying to use low dribble pickups and swinging up through their arms, hoping the ref is going to call a foul and he's going to get free throws, is going to work in his favor. It might work sometimes, but I've also seen times where it doesn't work. And when he doesn't get those calls, he starts kind of quickly checking out of being aggressive the way he normally is. That's when you kind of starts turning into this guy who's just floating around on threes and stuff like that. And I think that's a really important thing. Regardless of what Denver does to D'Lo or tries to attempts to defend D'Lo, I think an aggressive D'Lo is absolutely necessary to aggressive and scoring. You can't just be aggressive and just be wild. Sure. That doesn't do anything for us. But be aggressive in not allowing them to dictate how much of an impact you're going to make on offense. That is very, very crucial for the Lakers. I don't want to say it's the most important thing, but I will say it like this. If D'Lo has a good series, I feel way more confident that we can steal a series or steal multiple games from Denver than I do if he get another repeat of what happened last season.
I'll put it plainly, Vinay. If you get a repeat of last year, you're not beating Denver. Like, I'm sorry. Like, I know both of us have kind of spoke about Gabe, right? Gabe's probably a nice, at least I've called him D'Lo insurance, and I think Dinwiddie is also D'Lo insurance. That doesn't mean D'Lo can have a terrible series. Like, I think there are spots here and there that Gabe and Dinwiddie can fill in if D'Lo's not playing well, but you're just not beating the Denver Nuggets without getting production from your starting point guard. And I know D'Lo has, you know, players that he, like, when people press up on him or full court press him, he kind of struggles with some ball pressure. I also think D'Lo just plays himself most of the nights. Like, it's usually D'Lo versus himself a lot of the times. Like, the shots he takes is just representative if they're going in or not. Like, and he has like a swagger about it. He has like a moxie to him that kind of really rubs off when he's playing well. I think they need a big series from him. He's one of the guys that they're going to throw their better defender at Austin Reeves, I think, this year. They threw him on they had Bruce Brown to kind of and I forgot how quickly Bruce Brown got into D'Lo's head. It was in game one. Like, I thought this was a series like that. I thought it was like prolonged. It was game one, first half. They were talking a little bit, and then Bruce Brown just got like three straight and ones on D'Lo. And it was clear that D'Lo was kind of out of it from that point. But he should be able to attack this team. KCP locked him up, and KCP's an awesome chase-around defender. But you should at least be able to put KCP in jail a little bit. You should be able to, like, get to your spots, get to your mid-range, hit open threes at the minimum. No, they need D'Lo to be aggressive. And I like that you brought that in with force, because I agree. Like, this is not a team where D'Lo can be super passive. He's not going to get a million – like against the Pelicans, the game we blew them out, right? D'Lo got a bunch of cuts to the basket, a lot of layups, a lot of off the UCLA cut where he just got to the rim and LeBron found him. You're not gonna really get that in this series. Like, you go to the rim, you're gonna be mauled by Aaron Gordon.
Yeah.
And you're gonna need to be able to get up and do it again. Or you cut to the rim, you flash to the free throw line, there's a dude that's hanging on you. You need to be able to hit that. You need to be able to draw contact. You need to be able to get to the line. Those are things that I think in a physical series, which Denver is gonna make this, the guys coming off their bench aren't offensive stalwarts, Vinay. It's Peyton Watson. It's Christian Brown. These are physical dudes. not great shooters, so you kind of win in that case. But these are guys that are going to throw on D'Lo as well throughout the game. And Jamal Murray, another competitive MF-er. I saw someone, I forgot who it was, say like D'Lo has to kind of match Jamal Murray. That's not happening. I don't think D'Lo is coming close to matching Jamal Murray. But we need like the 18 to 20 and maybe one like hot 30, 35 point game where he hits 7 threes and just helps our math game. I think that's needed. I'm going to flip this on you. What are you expecting from D'Lo? Ooh. Not what's needed from D'Lo. What are you expecting in this series?
Good question. I don't know. That is my answer. I think he's going to come out aggressive. I think he's going to come out aggressive to start games. He's going to look for his shot. He's going to look to attack. But how he starts early, I think, is going to dictate a lot of how it goes for him the rest of the game. And I just don't know, dude. Like, cause like, you know, the first game against New Orleans has a great game. Really good. First quarter in the second game, he's amazing. He basically keeps us in the game. But then the rest of the game, he kind of is quiet, second, third, fourth quarters. So it's just like, my thing is like, I don't know how to place. There's this weird thing with him. And, you know, we'll talk about it at the end of the season when we do like a player perspective, retrospective or something like that. Like he doesn't strike me as a guy who consistently, like every minute that he's on the floor, he's always doing something to like threaten be offensive, like offensively. I'm not saying he's not capable of, it's just, we don't use him that way. And he's not like that, like when he has the ball in his hands. And I don't know how that translates against a team like Denver, because like, even if we rewind it back to like the Memphis series, what was the game? It was a game 5 against Memphis at home where he went crazy in the third quarter or something like that.
Game 6, game 4,
mm-hmm. Or it was a game 6.
Okay, when it was close, the close game.
Yeah. And then he broke it open. Four. I think. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Game 4. Mm-hmm. And like, that was an example of like a game where he was like, he was okay. Like nothing to, you know, write home about. And then the third quarter, he catches fire, breaks open the game for us. So I don't know what that looks like against Denver. Like, is it we get steady? You know, he starts off shooting. He's making his open threes. He's finding open guys. You know, he's drawing a couple fouls here and there for shooting fouls. That happening throughout the game, in my mind, the way I'm trying to figure it out, is that what I expect from D'Lo for this series? Is that what I think D'Lo is going to do? Mm-hmm. Or do I think D'Lo is going to do that thing where he's like, okay, like he's not hurting us, he's not helping us too much, but he's not hurting us, he's doing his job. And then there's like some quarter or some stretch where he really breaks it for us. I think that second part is what's going to happen. That's my expectation. That if we get the version of D'Lo that we want to help us win this series or win games in this series, it's not going to be, if we get the first version, that's great, because we're probably winning the series if that's what's happening. But if we get the second version, I think that's better than what he did last season, last time we played the series. But I think that is a step up. I think that's helpful. I think that's what's going to happen. We'll get the quarters where he's doing really well. What do you think about that? Like splitting the two different kinds of impacts that you can get from him?
Yeah, it's interesting. So I think at least now, just again, comparing from last year, our offense winning is so much more organized. Like there's a lot more just understanding of where people are supposed to be, and D'Lo is a part of that. Like he does a lot of like little touch screens here and there. He'll go screen for Rui a lot of the baseline cuts that Rui gets, you know, D'Lo's kind of finding him on those. And that's what I mean with D'Lo. A lot of times people look at him from the shooting aspect, and I think the shooting is just like kind of uncontrollable to me. That there's like a ton of variance, like when you take the shots he does, they're very difficult shots, right? It's just they're tough shots. A lot of them are contested. Sometimes they go in, sometimes they don't. I think with Denver, who's going to be in a drop back coverage, right? They're going to be and this is where the attention that LeBron and AD hopefully kind of create on the rim pressure. You talked about how they want to attack the basket. I'm hoping D'Lo can kind of leverage that. He's able to attack a team that's already in rotation. And D'Lo's talented enough to do that. Like last year, whatever it is, he can say that he's preparing as if it's New Orleans. I don't believe him one bit. This series is going to decide a lot of how his summer goes. I think he's going to feel a lot of pressure to play well. And they need him to play Vinay. Like like, I don't want D'Lo being, I don't know, like a Malik Beasley, like feeling like he's just a spot up guy. Like D'Lo needs to be aggressive. He needs to attack closeouts. He needs to be a guy that's running pick and roll. And if he's, if his shot's not going well, I think he's just going to get subbed. Here's how I see this. This is not a series you can hide D'Angelo Russell defensively. There's just no one to hide him on. That, like, last year we tried to hide him on KCP. KCP cooked him. Like, absolutely. Mm-hmm. He had like 20 points in game one. He had another like 20 plus points in game four, I believe. KCP was really good. KCP's a guy, they run off a lot of screens, a lot of curls, a lot of like curl actions that you just can't hide D'Lo, and his offense needs to be there. And I need a little bit more engagement. Like that second Pelicans game, I didn't really like D'Lo's defensive kind of engagement. Didn't like his defense on Alvarado. And Alvarado's another guy that's going to kind of push it to your face kind of thing. Like Alvarado pushes the point to you to know where the D'Lo kind of will kind of go in his shell. But I think he's a huge X factor, Vinay, for this series. He's kind of our MPJ on their end, where if MPJ is hitting threes, I think you probably lose versus Denver. Yeah. I think if D'Lo, right? Like we'll get into MPJ in a little bit. I want to ask you about this because that's a, and he's dealing with, I'm sure he's dealing with a lot of stuff, but just on the basketball end, it's interesting. But yeah, I think D'Lo is the guy that if he's hitting threes, kind of it puts everything into place, and like his counterpart just can't get to that level right now. Like Gabe Vincent hit two threes against the Pelicans. I think Gabe Vincent's a defensive specialist at this point of the season. So, do you agree with that? Where, in my opinion, you're not winning the series if D'Lo doesn't play well.
If I had to like make like three things, mm-hmm. like the top three things that have to go in our favor in order for us to steal this series, D'Lo has to be better. Like I don't know what better looks like. I don't know how. What scale of better he has to be compared to last? I mean, the bar's kind of low from what happened last time because he ended up being benched, but it has to be better than whatever it is. Like at the minimum, Raj, if you can't score, you've got to be able to defend. Like, you can't get played off the floor, because then the worst thing that for him that's going to happen is Gabe's going to take his minutes. It's going to be like the Dennis thing all over again. Like Gabe will take his minutes, or Spencer will take his minutes. And Darvin will lose trust and in him. And, you know, look, we remember the article after the marking game about him saying that, oh, he never had the opportunity to go to Darvin and say, hey, I can help you, help me, or whatever it was, kind of talking about that series or whatever it was that was going on. Like, that's a big deal, dude. Like, I haven't seen too many people, like the fans, like Lakers Nation and all of our other folks that have podcasts, they've discussed D'Lo, Jovan and them. They've discussed D'Lo, but I'm shocked that it hasn't been more of like a conversation amongst Lakers Twitter that like D'Lo has to show up. Like, forget the contract stuff and everything aside. This is just pride. Like, people don't think you can step up in the playoffs, and they, you know, like his playoff stats aren't that great, you know, in terms of like his regular season performance and shooting percentages and stuff, and then what it looks like in the playoffs. So I think if we get a better version of him, I think that makes a big difference. I think that's a big deal. Go for it.
I just want to, like, I don't think people remember how terrible the numbers were, Vinay, and I didn't even remember. Like, I knew it was a drop, but so regular season last year, D'Lo averages 17 and a half points per game, shooting 41% from three. So credit to him, shot 41% from three last year, 41.5% from three this year. So two good regular seasons. This was his numbers in the conference finals. 6 points, three assists, and two rebounds in four games.
Yeah.
11-point average drop. He went, 2 for 15 from three in that series.
I mean, you're a corpse, basically. I mean, that's a nice way of putting it. Like, you're just a dead body walking on the court. Because, I mean, we know that he wasn't helping us on defense either. Like, we were having, like, KCP was you know, getting in trouble. So, It's just there has to be a better version of it. Like, if there's anybody that should take this series personally, it should be D'Lo. Just for the pure sake of I know NBA players do this cool thing. They try to be cool about it. I've talked to NBA players before, even guys who play in the league right now. Every NBA player has this aura is the word that everybody likes to say, where they like to pretend they're like too cool. You know, like when they publicly answer questions to people, they'll always be like, oh no, it's not a big deal. You know, it's just like, I am who I am. That's who I'm going to be. I'm secure with myself. Like, yes. But if you ask them behind closed doors, if like that series bothered them, or if the way people talked about them as a person, you know, as a player bothered them, all of them get bothered by that. I know top tier players that get bothered by the smallest things, criticisms they get. So I can only imagine a guy who's in a contract year being feeling that way. So it's just, I need to see it. Like, I don't need to see emotion. I don't need you to see you do cartwheels when Braun scores a dunk or something like that. I need you. Like, I need the player locked in. And that's, again, I don't want to say like that's going to be the difference between us winning and losing, because I think it's more than that. But I think that is an important part of us winning and losing. That's going to be a crucial part of it.
100%. I think the most damning part of all those numbers isn't just the 6 points, isn't just the whatever 2-for-15 percentages. And he shot 4 free throws the whole series.
Yeah.
And it came in one game. You know, like I think that just shows in a level, just a level of engagement that that wasn't there. And he was taken out, and players have bad series, so don't want to like pin this on him. It's just last known on D'Lo. It's funny because, you know, you brought up the article and how he mentioned Dennis Schroeder as kind of one of the kind of reasonings why him and Ham couldn't have a fruitful basketball conversation, however those two led together. But you watch back, Dennis Schroeder was one of the ones that was very annoyed with D'Lo as that series went on. You could see it in Dennis's face. I mean, as much as both of us think Dennis has his faults, that dude's a competitive MF-er that just dies on the court. And I'm not saying D'Lo isn't, but they just do it in separate ways. And D'Lo doesn't really show it in his face very much. But no, man, D'Lo needs to – you can't have a guy drop 11 points his average in a series. Like, that's death. Like, the Lakers were D'Lo's not some guy the Lakers throw in the corner. D'Lo's not Vando on offense. Like, D'Lo's a guy they highly involve in a lot of their sets. Basketball is a flowing 5-person sport. You take one guy out, it changes the, you know, the rhythm of the team. And so I think D'Lo is very important, man. So
I'm with you. Yeah. I think we'll find out. We'll find out what this ends up looking like. And I think, you know, we're on the road to start this series. Like, that, the best way to send a message that you're serious about something different is to do it on the road. Whether it's game one, game two, whatever it is. So we'll see how that works out. So let's pivot a little bit here. And I'll ask you a question, get your thoughts on this question. So Lakers, every Laker fan hates drop coverage, every single one. we hate it. We despise it. I understand the reason for it. I understand the strategy behind running drop coverage. I understand why we do it. I understand who Darvin Ham is. I know what coaching tree he comes from, and all that sort of stuff. Everybody that's come from that coaching tree runs their defenses very, very similarly that from Budenholzer's tree. So we're going to see that tomorrow, Raj. We're not going to see the Lakers do something where they're just like playing straight up man or something like that. We're going to see some zone, most likely. We're going to see that drop coverage. That drop coverage has torched us. We've had some really, really bad games as a result of that. There's games against the Kings that come to mind. There's the games, games against like that Dallas game where Exum goes crazy because nobody's guarding him and we're playing drop coverage that we end up being unsuccessful in. This team is very unique. The Nuggets are very unique for two reasons. One of the reasons that we mentioned is that their best player, Jokic, can stand on the perimeter and shoot threes. And they don't actually lose out on rebounding because guys like Michael Porter Jr., who's 6'10", and Aaron Gordon, who's basically a small ball center at 6'9", 6'10", can just crash the glass like normal. Jamal Murray's a great rebounder and stuff like that. The other unique part of this team is Michael Porter Jr. can also shoot threes at like a 40% plus clip rate. And he's 6'10". And so as a result of that, it's hard to defend a guy like that. And if Mike Malone is as tactical as we think he is, and he sees AD sitting in drop coverage, he's going to try and exploit that. He's going to run pin down stuff to get guys free using Jokic, knowing AD's not going to come out of the paint, probably not go too high up over the free throw line because they don't want to, you know, he doesn't want to give up the back cut or whatever to Jokic or set up a bad mismatch. We're going to run that. It's going to be some frustrating possessions when that happens. And I know the timeline is going to be very pissed when that happens. Raj, how much drop coverage can we actually run against this Denver team And how much do you think we're going to run against this Denver team?
Can I spin that? Because I've seen that as well, kind of the concern of the drop coverage. So people say this. I'm not saying you or anyone else is doing this. It's just when they say don't run drop covers, they never say what we should run. What do you right? Like, it's always, why are you running drop? All right, give me a better response then. Like, the point of the drop coverage is not for Anthony Davis, Vinay. It's for our guards, right? It gives them a very direct, and we've run this defense all year. Minnesota's going to run into Minnesota, honestly, when this isn't a general NBA pod, but Minnesota's ran into the one team that can crush the defense that they've ran all year, right? They run a very standard, put everything to Gobert, Naz Reid, Towns, and they've gone against a team that says, F all that, we shoot mid-range twos, come out to us, right? The reason Denver is so different with this is because the way you beat a drop, right? Teams run drop against us all the time, right? They drop back against LeBron when he's coming off the pick and roll. Number one, because LeBron's not a pull-up jump shooter. No offense, Bron fan. I'm just mean like coming off pick and rolls. He's not pulling up. Yeah. Like, don't come at me for that. And AD's not a not that they would, but like, and AD's not really a what's called a pop guy either, right? So AD doesn't pop on a lot of those screens because he's just afraid of his. He's afraid is the wrong term, but he just doesn't shoot. Denver will. And so my question is, there's like. There's this thing we say, like, in people who take physics, there's no good physics teacher, like, because physics is just hard as hell. There's no good answer here. Like, there's no answer, right? So you have to pick something that you can be consistent with, and you have to be willing to give up something.
Yeah.
And this is gonna sound freaking insane, I know, but I think, Vinay, you have to live with MPJ threes. You're not impacting MPJ shots. What we did last year is we put D'Lo on MPJ, and MPJ shot over him. He also shot over Austin Reeves. Yeah. We put LeBron on MPJ, which, again, Bron fans don't kill me, but it's a disaster because you don't want LeBron chasing MPJ around. This is a waste of his legs at that point. You can't put AD on MPJ because then he curls off screen. I think you have to put D'Lo on MPJ. And you have to have whoever you have to kind of overhelp on him and Aaron Gordon, basically. I'm not saying give MPJ walk in threes. I'm just saying, like, so Denver runs the same action, Vinay, every time fourth quarters. Same action. It's every time. Nerd out with me here a little bit. All what they do is they have Jokic with the ball at the top of the key.
Yeah.
They run Murray comes off and Aaron Gordon, like, back screen curl, right? So it's all in the center of the floor. They put MPJ on one corner, KCP on one corner. They fly Jamal Murray off one screen, and they have Aaron Gordon kind of setting a back screen here. So you could either switch this action and have your small dude who's chasing Jamal Murray. So let's just vision this with me for a little bit. You have now Austin guarding Aaron Gordon, right? Because now Aaron Gordon's man switches onto Jamal Murray, and now they throw. And Jokic gets the ball and kind of dumping down Aaron Gordon, or your guard can chase over on Jamal Murray, right? He's behind. And so your big has to step up. Now Jokic is in a 4-on-3 advantageous situation, or you can leave Jokic and Jokic just gets the ball and hits a floater. It's a very tough offense to cover. Mm. And it's the reason why the Lakers put in a drop back is because your point with the offensive point of where the Lakers think they have to score at the rim, they want to take away the rim from Denver. You take away the rim from Denver, you're going to give up jump shots. And there's no right answer. Like, I would love to know, people who don't want drop coverage, what do you want? You want them to blitz Jamal Murray? All right, fine. It's Jokic 4-on-3 coming off the pick, right? Mm. You want them to hedge and try to recover? Do you trust D'Lo to hedge and recover? I don't. I love Austin. I think Austin's a good chaser. I think having him try to hedge and recover is very tough. There's no good answer here. I think you have to pick one and kind of let results be your guide. If Jamal Murray's coming off pick and rolls and just draining pull-up threes, which he has the ability to do, I think you kind of have to live with long twos from Jamal Murray, Vinay. Contested long twos. And if he hits those at a 50% rate like he did last year, you kind of lose. It's a tough kind of proclamation. I'm seeing in the chat, Sid is saying ice ball screens. Again, a trouble with icing on those is that Jokic can also shoot. Like, that's what you give up on an ice ball screen, right? You give it up, Jokic is going to have an open jump shot. And maybe that's what you live with. But I kind of ranted a lot there. Take that anywhere you want. But do you see my point there? I guess with the drop coverage concerns from people, it's just I want to know what you would run then. Like, what are you can't, I don't think you can switch. You can't switch Austin onto Jokic, right? If it's a Jamal Murray Jokic pick and roll, you have Austin and Jamal Murray. You can't switch that action. So that's why they go into a little bit of a drop. Now you can have an aggressive drop where AD's at the level of the screen, but now you put Jokic getting downhill. It's a tough kind of answer there, but take that where you want. Where I guess my question back to you is, what would you run? Like, what would you run? I guess in the base defense to start.
Yeah, you know, you bring up a good point
I love Sid saying just pray he misses. That's part of this. Yeah, it's 100% part of this. Sorry.
Yeah. Right. No. I think Sid's also kind of mentioning something that like there's this game of like calculated risk that you just have to take, right? Like the Lakers have done that. Yeah. They did that with the Dante Exum game that Dallas had. Like they said, dude, this guy shoots like 12% from three. We're just going to let him take those threes open. And he killed us because he made like nine threes, some crazy number. But I guess, yeah, if you think about it from a calculated risk standpoint, like if you took all the possession data, and I haven't done this, so I wouldn't know. But if you took all the possession data and you said, okay, what are the plays that the Nuggets run the most, which is like that normally results in points, probably the one that doesn't get as much might be the Michael Porter Jr. dribble handoff pull up, depending on how it's being defended or the quality of the defender that's on it, or what that defender forces him to try to do as opposed to, you know, just getting a wide open three. Compared to Jokic on a 4-on-3 or a short role play or Jamal Murray coming off that screen with his defender behind him. I mean, there's data behind that, right? Like, so I wonder if that's the way that the Lakers are probably thinking about it. They're saying, hey, you know what? Look, we know that he has a height advantage against the guys that we have, but if we can stick to him, and maybe we can get him to miss this. Like, obviously, 10 for 10, that's whatever he did against the Lakers the last time. Those weren't all pinned down screens that he was coming, or those weren't all like screens that he was coming off of flare screens or whatever.
Yeah.
Those are just open catch and shoot opportunities that he was getting because we weren't rotating well enough to match what they were doing. So maybe if I think of it your way, what happens if we do this? Like, what is the natural progression for that offensive player? And then the other way, I guess you can think of it is, can I get the ball out of the hands of their two best players? If Jokic and Murray are on the floor, I don't want Jokic's decision-making probably hurts you more than his actual scoring does because it gets everybody involved. And Jamal Murray, when he's scoring the basketball more than doing anything else, hurts you a lot. You know, it's the LeBron-Kyrie dynamic. When LeBron's dishing and stuff like that, you're going to lose. And then when you get Kyrie scoring on top of it, now you're in a world of hurt. So it's the same problem dynamic that probably the Nuggets have. So, yeah, I mean, I get it. You might get torched by MPJ in a game, and Laker fans are going to be very upset about that. But it's a calculated risk. I don't know. That's a great way of thinking about it.
It's tough, right? Denver's one of the best teams in the league, and I just love how a lot of the simplified stuff is just make Aaron Gordon shoot. You don't think every other team defends Denver that way? You don't think Denver knows exactly how to leverage that into their offensive game? Which is why, you know, I think putting AD on Aaron Gordon is probably your best chance. But also then Aaron Gordon becomes a handoff guy. He crashes the glass, right? I guess my point with this, Vinay, is there's no easy answer here. And I think your point is spot on. Taking the ball out of, you know, Jokic and Murray's hands. I think that's what it is. And look, maybe Murray averaged 32 a game last time. 32, 6, and 6. Like, superstar numbers for him to go along with Jokic's just gaudy numbers as well. But I think that's what it is. If their offense is running through MPJ, I think you've kind of made the correct decision there. I think if, again, MPJ shoots 39% from three, it's not like this is a great shooter that you're this is a terrible shooter that you're leaving open. It's just there's a lot of places that you can kind of go with this. None of them have really great answers. And the other point I've seen a lot, Vinay, is just make Jokic a scorer or just make Jokic a passer. It's not human. Like, that's not a human thing. It's very tough to watch a guy put up 45 on you and do nothing about it. It's just not how the flow of basketball goes. And Jokic is just too good. And Jokic is good enough to put 50 on you in that case. And maybe that's just something you live with. But I think you have to kind of make Jokic and Murray a 2-on-2 game, right? If Jokic and Murray are running in action, you want to keep that 2-on-2, and that's the point of that drop. And sometimes you can switch that, and that's why, like, I think my answer to this is put LeBron on Jamal in fourth quarters. But you put LeBron on Jamal. Yeah. And look, again, are these fair asks? Are these realistic asks? I don't know. Do you want to beat Denver? Is my question. Like, that's what it has to be. I think it has to be LeBron on Murray, AD on Jokic. You can switch a lot more. You can keep your guy in front of you. You can play more straight up, man. Make KCP and MPJ beat you off the dribble. Yeah. Make them play one-on-one basketball. Don't let them play in a defense that's rotating, that's compromised. And I think that's how you beat Denver. And you have to keep up scoring-wise. So I think the lineups we play, we haven't really gotten to that. We can do that as the series goes on.
Yeah, yeah.
But I think the lineups are super key. I think you have to keep a 7-8-man rotation. I don't really trust Jackson Hayes in a series like this. Mm-hmm. Denver also plays small backup five. They play Aaron Gordon at backup center in the playoffs. So you can kind of live with a Rui or LeBron there, and in other instances you couldn't. But it's a tough series. It's a war. I think you have to get game one, Finney. That's my reading on this.
I think it's more stealable than game two. I think game two, see, that's the reason why I'm trying to think to myself, like, the Lakers might think to themselves, hey, you know what? We think we have a good game plan. Even though we lost those regular season games, we think we have a good game plan because we're losing those games like right at the end of those games. Like they're outside of the first one where we got, I think, our butts kicked. Like even the very most recent game that we lost to them, it's like last minute of the game they go on a 10-0 run because we just can't make shots, and they're just outletting it and getting runouts. So I think the Lakers may feel when they watch the tape that if we rotate a little bit faster here, if we execute this a little bit better, we probably turn this loss into a win. That's why when I think about like what that game one's going to look like, I don't know if it's going to look too different from what we have going on in like the regular season, because they have to see what happens with more fine tuning, more precise time in the film room and that sort of thing. But you brought up a great point, and I think that's a great next topic to go to. That fourth quarter has to be AD and LeBron guarding that two-man game of Jokic and Jamal Murray. This is, again, like, I understand people saying it's not realistic and there's three other players on the floor, but we watched those guys not play defense in the regular season. They haven't played defense since the All-Star break, frankly. Like, there's been spot moments. I would say that these two New Orleans games is probably the two games where I've seen them the most active defensive rebounding-wise. This I'm talking about LeBron and AD. Defensive rebounding wise and just defensively, and most engaged I've seen since the All-Star break. You've been saving your legs for these moments, for this type of series. This is where we have to expect our best two players. Like the whole year 21, that's all gone now. Like we're in the playoffs. Like we can't say that anymore because, like, I would imagine even Bron cares about how he performs in the playoffs too as well. And so, you know, if he was hobbled, you know, if AD was hobbled, you know, he had the back issue or something. I get it. Like, actually, to be fair, like, in last season, I think a lot of fans are saying both of these guys are actually injured and playing through the playoffs. Right. And the role players are stepping up. So it's great for the role players, and it's also great that these guys are gutting it through. That's why I could never really be mad. We weren't too mad about, like, Bron's. Like, people wanted to do that thing where they were like, oh, AD's inconsistent against the Nuggets, but like Bron didn't have that great of a series against the Nuggets either. He was kind of up and down in games. The late game pull up threes that you were mentioning hurt us a lot because that offense wasn't that very good. But Bron looks good. He's looked good in the New Orleans games. He looks good. His foot looks good. His body looks good. AD also looks good when his back isn't acting up. I'm with you. In the fourth quarter, when it's money time, we know that the Denver Nuggets are going to go to their two-man game. And our two guys can guard their two best guys to some degree. I think you have to – I can live with that, Raj. Like, even if we get overwhelmed, I can live with that. I'm okay with that. Are you okay with – even if we lose that matchup, are you okay with two-on-two basketball?
Yeah.
Everybody clear out, because that's what's going to happen. And I would say we should attack it the other way too to some degree if it's working in our favor.
Yeah. Oh, 100%. And I remember, again, rewatching game four. This is something that – the broadcast is bringing up as well. We were kind of dying with Rui on Jokic, and I think that's a great plan to start. I think fourth quarter, it's got to be AD on Jokic, and it's got to be LeBron on Jamal Murray, so you can switch more actions. It's what we did in 2020, and these guys aren't the same age as they were in 2020. Like, that's a given, and their legs are whatever they are. I think this is as healthy as LeBron and AD could ever be. AD had a little bit of a shakeup with his lower back, whatever it is, but you know, you got a few days off here. I'm expecting just full strength, and I'm expecting those guys to be ready game one, and I'm expecting them to guard them in fourth quarters. I think this first game is a huge chance to do that. If you can win game one, Vinay, you can get blown out in game two. You get 2 days off before you go home to kind of reset the series. And I just want to flip this as well. I talked about the threes that didn't go in. LeBron needs to hunt Jamal Murray, and he needs to be able to make Jokic think about switching. Like, Jokic should not be able to switch on LeBron on the perimeter, right? Like, this needs to be LeBron, I go by you. Like, you cannot stay with me. I'm getting to the basket. You're going to foul me if I get there. I'm getting to the line. I think that's extremely important. We did a lot of attacking Jamal Murray. The problem is, we always played one non-shooter, so it kind of really mucked up how our floor and spacing was. Dennis Schroeder actually hit some threes, but it's the same kind of, you know, issue that LeBron just doesn't get going in those cases. But I think that's important as well. I think our stars have to attack their scars, and I think just the way we started this podcast has to be force on force. You can't attack this team with finesse. Jamal Murray is going to do a lot of physical shots. He's going to get to the rim. He's going to be physical with his floaters. Jokic is a very physical player that will bully you if you let him. I think those two have to guard the other two best players. And I mean, Jokic is going to guard AD. Like, you know, like it's,
yeah.
Aaron Gordon is going to be on LeBron. So I think those two have to guard each other, and they have to score on the other end. It's a large ask. It's a tall task. Lakers are the lowest betting lowest team you could bet on so far. Well, I guess now it'll be the Miami Heat on the Celtics or whatever it is. But Lakers aren't favored at all, Vinay. Lakers are actually huge underdogs in this series. So we'll see.
Contrary to the narratives that Denver fans keep complaining about.
Right.
It's that same.
You got what you wanted. You got what you wanted, man. You're the favorite. Yeah, you're the heavy favorite.
Yeah, it's the same account every time. Oh, why are they talking about the Lakers possibly upset? Bro, they were telling the bubble. They were telling us the Blazers were going to upset us in the first round. Like, it's just normal to take the underdog, and, you know, that's just what people do, and Lakers have large families. Anyways, I'm with you. I have a question about this matchup, Raj. Your confidence level of this matchup. So they like to play Aaron Gordon straight up against LeBron. They have a lot of confidence that Aaron Gordon can slow down LeBron. They don't send extra help. They will play him unless Bron drives into traffic and into extra people. Oftentimes they'll leave him on an island. And even when Bron does drive, Aaron Gordon is a great athlete and great with the verticality contests, and he still jumps out of the building. He has the weight to absorb LeBron, what LeBron likes to do, and challenge him. You know, Bron's foot was fried last year, so there was a few moments where, you know, he looked kind of mortal against Aaron Gordon. I think they're going to do that again. Question to you is, how confident, you know, same way we talked about D'Lo, him taking it personally and that sort of thing. How confident are you that, how confident are you that Bron will be able to win that matchup more often when that comes up? And secondly, how crucial is that to the Lakers being successful offensively?
Yeah, it's crucial. I think Aaron Gordon's a very special defender in terms of not special, like history, just what the tools he has to stop LeBron, I think, are just built in an absolute lab. He has the physicality and the foot speed. He can move his feet. I don't think that's the route, at least all game, Vinay. I think this is a big Austin Reeves series. Like, Austin averaged like 22 a game against Denver, and look, people remember the hot shooting. There's a lot of them off pick and rolls. There's a lot of them getting to the line. There are a lot of like and one plays people forget. And again, he fits the bill of force with force. People see Austin as a finesse player, but he's not when he attacks the rim. He loves physicality. And I think that's so important in this series. I think it's important for LeBron to have a release valve, which again, last year, I don't think he had very minimal. He had Austin, but obviously D'Lo was what it was. And the other guy was Dennis. It was a lot of LeBron trying to run his head through a wall. And, you know, I'd like LeBron to be more of a screener in this series. Like, I'd like him to screen for Austin, make them decide if they want to switch Aaron Gordon on Austin Reeves, and then get LeBron maybe with Jamal Murray, with KCP, with one of those guys on him. And that's kind of what I would like to see. Do you remember, like, I remember when we had when we used to play the Clippers, Vinay, and Kawhi would hunt KCP relentlessly. Do you remember this? Like we used to play the Clippers.
The size advantage,
like,
yeah.
Yes, and we'd be like, man, KCP has no chance on Kawhi.
Yeah.
Denver Nuggets start two guards who should have no chance on LeBron, in my opinion. Like I think Jamal, like LeBron was able to get to the rim on Jamal Murray from the tape I was watching. You know, Jamal fights in a way that, you know, some guards don't. But Jamal Murray and KCP are two guys I think LeBron should be able to go at and actually leverage our offense and get us good shots that way instead of trying to run his head through a wall against Aaron Gordon. I think that plays into what Denver wants. It also, you talked about the war of attrition on Jokic. That's just too much for LeBron to try to, you know, attack Aaron Gordon every single time. He'll win some of those matchups. It's just, it's a lot. And LeBron's not getting the calls like he, you know, used to. And
yeah, the refs are kind
of, and the refs are kind of swallowing their whistles even more this in the playoffs. I see the conversation online about that. So that's not the place I would attack. I think it's important in fourth quarters. I think it's important LeBron is very tactical and very aggressive in his approach of how he attacks the Nuggets in terms of what guard he is hunting. But I think attacking Aaron Gordon one-on-one just seems like the wrong move. What do you think? Is that a matchup you would kind of go at? I think that's not the way you pierce Denver's defense is going at their most big physical best, you know, one-on-one isolation defender.
Yeah. I don't think that's the best strategy, but I think that Denver knows that again, like, cause we keep saying that Mike Malone's tactical. I think Denver is going to be ready for if Bron tries to mismatch, huh? And their guys are going to be ready to not take those mismatches. They'll do whatever they have to do. It's not like the Lakers run anything exotic to get those mismatches. It's very straightforward. Guard, come over here, screen for me, and we'll try to force the mismatch. Like I, it feels to me that like if it's KCP and Jamal that's on the floor, they're going to work very hard to not get switched on to Bron. You know what I mean? Like so, like the execution of that two man game, whoever it is that's coming over, if it's D'Lo or if it's Austin, like you got to be ready. Like you might have a small window of opportunity to where Bron gives it to you and you got to either fire it off or attack the rim because, you know, Aaron doesn't want to leave LeBron. Like he wants to stay on him at all times. It's crucial. I was actually looking up while you were talking, I was looking up minutes for the series last year. So it's like, so when I looked up the minutes of the series last year, like Bruce Brown came off the bench and he played 27 minutes in that series. So it was Jamal, Jokic, Porter, KCP, Gordon, Bruce Brown. And then they had Jeff Green, who averaged about 17 minutes in that game. Christian Braun played, but he only played 7 minutes. He'll probably play more. I know that Jeff Green's gone. Bruce Brown's gone. So they got Peyton Watson in there. Obviously, Christian Braun, I think he's taking on some more minutes too as well. So there's probably a realistic chance here where they only go maybe six or seven deep at the very most. In this series against the Lakers, assuming nobody gets into serious foul trouble throughout the series. Which means to me, Raj, that Aaron Gordon's going to be on the floor quite a bit.
He
played 37 minutes a game last season. I would assume he's probably going to play that much, if not closer to 40 minutes, because it's just the first round of the series too as well. So it's like the Lakers should probably prepare for Gordon to be on Bron a lot. When it's not Gordon, it might be Michael Porter Jr. Like it might be Watson. I think Watson's a little bit taller, so it might be Watson. Like I'm very curious to see who the second guy is that has to guard Bron. They might run a zone to try and mix it up, you know, if they play smaller. But I think he's gonna see him a lot, dude. And I'll tell you one thing that does give me a little bit more confidence. Bron's three ball is a lot nicer this year. I think his foot being fried really hurt his three ball last year. And I think he has more confidence in his three-point shot this year. So it would not shock me where if Denver is playing off on Bron, trying to bait him into playing far enough back where they want him to take the three, I think he knocks him down with some confidence this time around.
No, yeah, for sure. And like they really don't have anyone else than Aaron Gordon to guard him. If you look down their roster, I just don't think there's anyone else, right? MPJ just doesn't. Like he can't move laterally enough, and he just doesn't have enough size. Peyton Watson, I think, is a nice young defender, but I don't think he has enough in his back pocket. Christian Braun, the same way. It's really Aaron Gordon. That's the only guy. And like I said, KCP and Jamal Murray aren't a really good, like, I mean, KCP is a really good perimeter defender, but he's not a guy you throw on LeBron. Right. And they don't want to, you know, and Jamal Murray is not that guy either. And obviously they're not going to throw Jokic. A little wrinkle here is maybe you get Aaron Gordon in foul trouble somehow. Like, and Aaron Gordon's actually one of the best guys that doesn't get in foul trouble. So Aaron Gordon's very good at not fouling. Like, he's that's one of his talents. It's a nice kind of immovable object meets like a super force, right? It's the Lakers draw a lot of fouls, and the Nuggets are a team that don't foul a lot. So that'll be kind of an interesting kind of clash there. But Aaron Gordon is extremely important to them, and he's a guy they're going to throw on LeBron. I just don't want LeBron waxed and tired by the time that fourth quarter comes. Yeah. Your point is right. His jump shot has been going in. And again, kill me, LeBron fans, but I think living and dying by LeBron's jumper is not the place you really want to, like, you want to have a little bit more kind of controlled offense so you can get to the rim a little bit. But it's important, man. And why I think AD has to find a way to score on Aaron Gordon. Like, I don't expect AD to be able to bump Jokic off in the post, but Aaron Gordon, at least, if you can find a way to be a little bit more useful with your up and unders and stuff like that and be aggressive. Yeah. But no, you're right, though. Aaron Gordon's going to play a ton. Mike Malone sticks to a 6-7-man rotation. He's not Darvin Ham. He doesn't hand out second chances like they're candy. Like, Mike Malone is very strict with his minutes. They also have Reggie Jackson, who I believe in. It was another just kind of series factor. Reggie Jackson isn't good, but he's a Laker killer in a way that, like, he just is. Like, he's a guy that makes almost every shot when he plays us. He's very good against us, and I think he just has a skill set that hunts our guards in a way that he comes off screens and he pulls up and his floaters. So he'll be an interesting guy that, you know, comes off their bench. But for the most part, you're right. It's a 7-8 man rotation. I think we need to kind of live in that area as well. 8-7-8-9 at the most rotation and kind of move back and forth. I don't think this is a series where you can sit LeBron and AD a ton. Like, this is like a starters. This is a starters versus starters series. Yeah. Honestly, and
that's a good point. Let me look up how many minutes both the other two played for the other side. Yeah, Jamal played 41 minutes a game. Jokic played 42 minutes a game. Michael Porter Jr. 36 minutes a game. And then next highest was Aaron Gordon. So those four guys were playing. I mean, they were only sitting for 10 to 12 minutes at the very most of a game. So yeah, you might be right. Lakers have to go with their four best players, or at least their three best players, and say, all right, you guys be prepared to play every game, every minute that we can possibly squeeze out of you for every game. And then obviously with the short turnaround, that's a little bit difficult. But on the topic of LeBron, Raj, we discussed this in the last pod very lightly, and it's something that I think we should really discuss this. It's a good time to discuss this now. The Lakers have kind of run, every now and then, they run like an equal opportunity offense. Sometimes they run a LeBron-centric offense. Sometimes they run heavy dosages of AD pick and roll, depending on how it feels and who the matchup is, that sort of thing. The offense has been great since the All-Star break, probably one of the best offenses in the league. But I wouldn't say that the offense has really carved out an identity. It's mainly get as many open threes as we can, and then if not, give it to LeBron or AD, and they'll usually get shots at the rim. I would say I wouldn't say we're a jump shooting team. I wouldn't say we're only at the layups at the team, you know, that sort of team, even though it feels that it's more rim oriented than you. But the thing that we discussed last week was the two very different types of offenses that we saw in the two New Orleans games. In the first New Orleans game, we saw a lot of our guards do a lot of work, and kind of all the role players step up. And in the game, we had a huge lead. So, you know, everybody was just kind of in the flow scoring, and it looked like New Orleans is kind of overwhelmed. The second game is very different. New Orleans is winning that battle in the paint. Zion's going crazy. And, you know, D'Lo has a great first quarter to keep us in the game with all his three-point shooting. And then eventually, I would say second quarter, third quarter, fourth quarter, until things kind of slowed down in the fourth quarter, it was a heavy, heavy dosage of LeBron. Just all LeBron attacking, LeBron passing, LeBron scoring at the rim. We could spice it up in different ways, but for now, I just want to focus on the macro level. Two very distinct styles of playing basketball. One clearly led to, they both resulted in wins, different quality of wins. But the second one resulted in Bron being very taxed physically at the end of the game. And we started off this whole thing. One of the first topics we talked about is that game of attrition.
Yeah.
And all throughout the season, I think Ime Udoka said it. Dylan Brooks said it when we played Houston. The scouting report on Bron is to play the game of attrition. Make him have to go into fourth quarter mode early. And there's different ways to do that. You could wipe out all the role players, and now Bron has to do a lot of heavy lifting. There's different ways of doing it. What version do you think we are going to see in game one? Because I think we're going to see that second New Orleans game in game one, which is heavy dosages of Bron. And I think what they're hoping is if the guards are knocking down shots, we get maybe an improved D-Lo performance. Austin's doing the things that Austin does. AD's anchoring the defense. Rui kind of play that Swiss Army knife role where he fits in. Maybe Bron is not – he's wheeling and dealing like he normally does, but not expending as much energy. So he has some things in the fourth. I think that's what they want. What direction do you think the Lakers are going in? When it comes to like how they run their offense in that first game,
it's funny because LeBron, before he came here, at least the whole to even in 2020, right, was game one or feel out games. He kind of feels his opponent out. You don't have room to feel out Denver,
you can't drop games.
You can't just give up a game feeling out the Denver Nuggets. I like that part that you said. I think this is a game, and I think Austin's going to be heavily involved as well. The war of attrition. I want Jamal Murray defending. I want Jamal Murray using energy to play defense. I don't want to be able to them to hide Jamal Murray. They were able to hide Jamal on Dennis Schroeder, on D'Angelo Russell, on Jared Vanderbilt, on whatever non kind of offensive threat there was. I think the beautiful part about this team, Vinay, there's not really that guy this year. You can't hide Jamal Murray on Rui Hachimura. Right? Lakers run stuff for Rui, if that's the case. They get him in the post. But that's where I think I want LeBron being more facilitator, at least first quarters. And I think this Denver runs a very kind of standard defense, especially when you pick on a guy like Jamal or KCP. They blitz a lot of times, and they trust their backline defense. They trust their help defense a lot. I honestly think that's where the Lakers are best. That's where you talked about the Lakers don't have a real identity. I think their identity is where they figured out kind of how to play out of LeBron getting doubled or LeBron, you know, drawing attention. That's when the ball movement's really pretty, right? And it's LeBron gets doubled, you kick it to Austin in the short roll, and now he's kicking out. It's D'Lo getting an open three, or it's Rui in the corner, or Rui baseline cuts. I think that's what this needs to be. I want this game slow. I want it very slow pace, and LeBron controlling half court possessions by picking on Murray or KCP every time. Make them put two, make them switch, make them make a decision there. It should not be, like you said, this free-flowing, equal opportunity offense. We're here, D'Lo. Go cook MPJ a little bit. Let's see what you got. We don't have time for that. Every position matters too much against the Nuggets. You can be down 10 really quick if you have a really terrible offensive start. You can spot Denver a 15-point lead very easily. So that's why I'd like the pace to be slow. Keep the score as low as you can. Denver's going to score. But keep them out of transition as best as you can. And I think you're going to see LeBron – I agree with you. I think you're going to see LeBron control a lot more of this game early on. You know how he usually starts games by letting D'Lo and Austin kind of feel their way through it and kind of get their buckets in the regular season. I agree with you. I don't think we see that. I think we see LeBron and hopefully AD very, very aggressive early. And we'll see if that, you know, is conducive to a win. But I think that's what LeBron opens. And look, Vinay, LeBron got embarrassed last year.
Interesting.
Right? I saw that LeBron's 14-1 in first round series in the past in his career. The one loss was to Phoenix when AD went down in 2021.
Oh, right.
That's his only first round loss that's the only time he's ever lost in the first round. 14-1 in his career. It's an amazing number, by the way. But Denver's going to challenge that. And I think LeBron feels that way as well. I think we get a motivated LeBron from day one, Vinay.
If you want to build a narrative, we joke about it. I'm half joking because I think he does care. I think he does care about narrative stuff sometimes. I mean, he said it on his pod before. He's just like, oh, I hate that people say I don't have a bag. It's like, oh, okay, so you are listening to the dumb stuff that people say about you. And it does, and he says it bothers him. But I think like one of the narrative things that he probably wants, that he thinks he can really, if he wants to add to his GOAT claim, you know, that he could certainly do, is being like a game one or even a series win against a one seed, a two seed, being the seventh seed, and then being the defending champs. Like, that's something that you don't see too many guys at the very top be able to do. And I think a lot of his fans and a lot of even Laker fans have a lot of belief that Bron still has a gear in him, especially when the playoffs start, where he can really dictate the pace of a game and dictate, you know, whatever happens in a game. So I think like he has that chip on his shoulder. Like, I remember when we did the post pod, we talked about how Bron said that he might retire, and how Mike Malone was pissed that dominated the storyline, and the Nuggets winning a championship was no longer, the Nuggets sweep was no longer like the big story from that night when Bron did it. I think that stuff matters to Bron, and I think I would think that he feels, not that he needs it, so I don't want people to get confused. I don't think he thinks he needs it, but I think it'd be pretty cool for him to be a seven seed and be like, oh yeah, like, watch this. Let me show you how much the gap is actually between the guy that you guys are going to vote for MVP and me. And that's why I think that he'll put a stamp on this. I'm going to ask you a testy question though, Raj. I know we're getting close to 1:30, so or hour 30. I don't want to force folks to have to listen to us their entire Friday nights. But I'm going to ask you a controversial question. I think it's controversial. That New Orleans game, Bron was cast out. And we know Bron is one of the highest IQ players. He was not making shots. And it was bad. We were playing prevent offense, and it was really bad. And I jokingly said, again, half joking, because I was being serious a little bit. I was saying, like, dude, I don't think Bron should shoot the ball anymore in the fourth quarter. He's missed, like, four shots in a row. The offense is really, really bad. And we're just, like, it's not good. Like, just give it to somebody else. They tie the game. Finally, Austin Reeves decides to go score the basketball, scores very easily for us. And now all of a sudden we find some, and then Bron hits that fadeaway, I think, on the left-hand side baseline. And then he misses one, which AD saves with an offensive rebound, I think. I'm concerned that may happen again, meaning we'll get a good Bron game. He'll be carrying us, backpacking, whatever it is. But at some point, he might hit a cold stretch. And I'm worried that Bron won't recognize that he doesn't have it. I'm not saying that he's never – like, there's been times – like I said, the Memphis series last year, when Bron fans got mad at me earlier this year when I posted that clip of him saying that he was playing chess with Austin's confidence. I was like, Bron fans got very mad at me because I said, I don't think you were playing chess. I think Austin was just hot. And you were like, let me give it to the hot hand. But there's a version of this where when you're not hot, your superstar has to also be like, we need to go somewhere else, whether that's AD or whether that's somebody else.
Yeah.
Do you think Bron, after seeing that second New Orleans game, do you think Bron will recognize that if that's happening with him?
That's a tough way. So I'll frame it in a different way.
Sure, frame it in a different way. Go for it.
I think at least this is the whole point of the continuity and all that. I think LeBron at least has enough trust in Austin now. Yeah. I don't know about any of the other guys, honestly. Even as much as LeBron loves AD, LeBron's not running post ups for AD with 2 minutes left. It's not happening. It's not what we run at all. Yeah. AD will go games and not shoot in fourth quarters that are close. It's just an amazing development here. But I think LeBron at least trusts Austin enough to let him cook and let him, like, our biggest play against the Pelicans in the second game, Vinay, was it second game or first game? I can't remember anymore. Those games just feel so tied together. But the second game, yes, because New Orleans is coming back. Minute left, we're up one. So biggest possession of the game, really. We go to Austin, and LeBron's like, get out of your way. Like, you go ahead, because you just talked about he was 1 for 9. He was 1 for 9 in that quarter. Austin drives and kicks it out. Dyson Daniels helps unnecessarily. And then he kicks it out of D-Lo for the big three. Lakers go up 4 and eventually win that game. I think LeBron has enough trust there. I think this is an issue that every team goes through, right? Like, Boston's going to live and die by Jason Tatum and Jaylen Brown. Sure. They just are, right? Like, it's as much as I'm sure Porzingis may be having a good game, and maybe Tatum's cold, maybe Tatum's 6-for-20 going into the fourth quarter.
Yeah.
Boston runs the same fucking late game offense every time, and it wins them 64 games in the regular season, it gets them booted from the playoffs every year. But it's going to happen again. They're going to go to Jason Tatum, top of the key. Everyone knows what's happening. Step back, three. Sometimes it go in, sometimes it doesn't. Playoffs kills the variance because it's such a short series, whatever. I think we're going to go through the same thing. Man, like, I remember when I posted Vinay last year. I know you laugh because people don't get upset at me very much. But, like, I posted the...
They don't, bro. Anybody who's a regular listener, Raj and I could say exactly the same thing. But people will be on my head about anything I have to say, especially as Bron related. But go ahead. It's a running joke that we have. But go ahead.
Yeah. So, like, LeBron was coming off. They were going under every LeBron screen, and he was shooting every time. This was game one, and we lost the game. And I said, we lost the game because of this, because he shot every time, and he was shooting, what, 30% from three or whatever.
He was horrendous. Season. I was just like, dude, give Austin the ball. Stop shooting the ball, dude. Like, you're not making these threes. Like,
go. Yeah. See, that's why. You say it a lot more aggressively. Like,
that's what it is. Like,
that is, yeah. It's just,
no. Oh, I forgot. I was going to say, the reason why it's funny is because that's the way I talk when I play. I play with guys that I'm friends with. I played with a long time. The league that I play in, and when we play pickup and stuff like that, I just, like, when it's a close game, it's like a heated game against, you know, friends and stuff like that.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And somebody does some shit that doesn't make, I just look at him like, what are you doing? Like, well, why are we doing this? Like, we just give it to the guy that's hot. Like, we don't have to make this, you know, like,
it's difficult. But, no, for sure. But yeah, like, if they go under, like, maybe that, and people are like, no, that's the right shot. You know, he's open. Like,
for sure.
Yeah, maybe he's open. But in that instance, that was not the correct shot at all. He's shooting 30% from three. He hasn't hit one all game. He's like 1-for-6 from three in the game. He took three threes in the, like, balancing act of the game portion. So I think that's, like, part. But that's, you just kind of have to live with, and you hope it kind of bears out as the series goes on. Hope he makes shots. I think there's a trust in Austin, at least, that you have a release valve there. So it's not just, it used to be LeBron just top of the key. Even in our title year, really, Vinay, there was no other, like, other than maybe Rondo, but there was not another guard he can really score with, right? It was really LeBron at the top of the key, and we were like, oh, here comes a step back, here comes the what was it called? The look at the ball three, right? Whatever he was doing, like, where he would just look at the ball when he says back.
Yeah,
look
at it.
The fake drive or whatever it was. And so at least now, at least he has another guard to go at it. But I think these games are going to be close. Denver might be the most, like, the best executing team that's in the league. Yeah. And we're going to have to score down the stretch. And I think Austin LeBron two-man game is our best late game offense.
My expectations that they're gonna go in that direction. If it turns into a shot for shot thing, they're gonna do that, and they're gonna be like, they're gonna tell Bron, like, you know, we trust you.
Honestly, Austin should be the ball handler. Like, I just like because just the way that Denver defends it, like, it's kind of, you're gonna kind of need, because dangerous. I just think, like, how Denver defends it, like, I think it's probably better where then LeBron gets able to attack it in space. I think that's where they can share off. I just think, like, where we were most efficient against Denver was kind of Austin attacking off the ball. So we'll see how it works in game one.
Okay. So you gave a great answer. This will be my last question to you. Does Darvin Ham have the audacity, the courage, the confidence, where in those moments to go and tell the guys on the floor, let's run a play. Like, don't keep doing this if he sees that it's not working. Because I haven't seen him do it, but I'm curious. He has done it sometimes. Like, he's done it against the Clippers. I've seen him do it. But sometimes he hasn't done it. But in the playoffs, does Darvin Ham veto? I'll use Bron's word. Does Darvin Ham veto Bron's choice of offense and try to run something if he thinks that Bron is not being effective, or you know, if Bron himself won't just kind of make that decision?
So I think I told you this, but I didn't like the word veto, because this is just like, isn't these aren't the House of Representatives or however the hell these laws work. This is like this is a this is a conversation between coaches, between players, and like they need to have a, you know, be rowing in the same direction. The boat should be going the same direction. Like Darwin coming in and saying, no, you're running this. I don't think that's how this works. I don't think that's how that relationship works. I don't think that's how any coach who's coached LeBron James in the past decade works in this, right? Decade. He's left Eric Spoelstra in the Heat for 10 years. Has it been 10 years? I don't know. Whatever it's been. Yeah. 8, 9 years, whatever it is. I just don't think that's how any coach approaches this LeBron James in situation. There's a kind of understanding of what you run. Darvin Ham is not some, like, this isn't a, what's the coach in Oklahoma City's name? Mark Dagonaw, right? Mark Dagonaw is going to, Dagonaw, he's going to diagram and do all this stuff, and they're young enough that they're just going to listen with, you know, pokey ears and run exactly what he says, and that's kind of how, and Shea's going to get the ball, whatever. But yeah, I don't think that's how this team is going to work. There needs to be like understanding, and I'm sure Darvin has points of emphasis he uses, but like going out and directly saying like what they should do, I don't think that's how this works. It's going to run through LeBron, and it's his decision making, at least down the stretch. I think Darvin has plays he runs and actions they go to, but like, you know what Denver's running, and honestly, you know what we're running, and it's like, can you stop it? And that's how I see how this is going.
Yeah, I don't think Darvin Ham has the audacity to override LeBron. I think for a lot of the season, I think when we watch that happen, if that's the direction the Lakers going with the hunting mismatches and all that sort of stuff, I think that cat and mouse game is something that Bron likes to do. I think he trusts Bron to make the right decision out of that. It's going to be very funny if that doesn't work in our favor. It's going to be very funny to watch the timeline scream at Darvin Ham for not running something when his best player prefers to run that offense and thinks that that's the most effective offense. Not saying that there's a clash, but sometimes that does happen. Like, hey, it was working through 3.5 quarters. It's not working now, but this is, and it's a very crucial time for us to make this effective. But I don't know if he's the type of guy to make that adjustment. We didn't talk too much about like the Ham, the coaching stuff. But sure. I think both you and I, when we talked in the last pod, we said like the role players being inserted in a purposeful manner into the lineups is on Darvin Ham. Like the execution of the offense is on the players, the effectiveness, making your open shots, that kind of stuff is on the players. But putting guys in position to be successful, like not putting D'Lo on a guy that he can't guard, he can't chase around, or, you know, like if that's what you're going to do, then you might as well play Gabe if that's what his role is going to be for the lineup that you have on the floor. Like being smart and purposeful, like Dinwiddie can't go and be out there freestyling what the offense is going to be. Like he has to have some direction. That's on Darvin Ham. So I'm going to be very curious to see how he approaches this second round, because we have seen versions of Darvin Ham and this coaching staff where this team is like all of their – T's are crossed and their I's are dotted defensively, at least. And I think that's the part where he helps his team out. Any last thoughts? I don't want to force you off.
Yeah. I think that's pretty much it. I can't believe the series is already tomorrow. Yeah. So back into the cave where Denver lives, and you kind of fight your way out of it. I'll just say this, Renee, because I know we discussed kind of this is for the summer, but I'm glad playing Denver will give us a lot of answers of what this team is that I don't think we've gotten, right? Like if they get destroyed, then there's a license to kind of be very aggressive in the summer, or, you know, like I think how this series goes really can shape how you move in the summer in a way that, I don't know, losing in 7 OKC probably wouldn't tell you much, right? Or, you know, or these other series where maybe Phoenix just shoots you out the building and you never really learn how good you are. Denver's going to show you how good you are. Denver's the bar. How close can you get to grabbing it? And we'll see tomorrow.
Hey, I will say, if how we lose and how we win games, if we winning the series and all that stuff, let's just put all that stuff aside. How they perform, I think every player that's not LeBron and AD is going to be looked at like a micro. We've alluded to it before. Everybody who's been talking about D'Lo and him getting his extension and what his market's got, nobody in the NBA is looking at D'Angelo Russell's regular season and saying, I need to pay this guy this much money. They want to see what he does in the playoffs. He's almost a 10-year, I think he might be in his 10th year now. He's been in the league long enough where teams know what he is. They want to know what he can be in these high stakes moments. And so I think every player is going to be looked at. And I think our front office is going to look at him through that lens too, as well. But Raj, we'll find out tomorrow. We'll see what the Lakers have in mind, if they want to be the team that throws the first punch, or if we get, you know, a team that's trying to feel their way through the first game. Hopefully it's not the latter, because I think the Lakers fans would be very disappointed. I'm sure the jokes will be flying no matter what. If we win, they'll be even louder. But if we lose, I'm sure all the folks that hate the Lakers are going to be active on the timeline. But as always, Raj, this was wonderful. We will be back, I think, maybe on Sunday. We'll probably give it a day, because I know you do post games. You do them with Anthony, and then I think it'll just be really busy tomorrow. So I think Sunday, when it quiets down and we can look at the tape again, we can talk about adjustments. But we'll figure it out, whatever that's supposed to be. So for all the folks that have that joined us, all 1,600 of you, it looks like, on this wonderful Friday night, we appreciate you joining, whether you like, share, subscribe, whatever you do, or if you just show up and listen to us speak. If you did catch the whole thing, you can rewatch it on Twitter, or you can just wait till Apple and Spotify. I'll upload it for you. You can watch the entire video version at your comfort and leisure. And honestly, we'll see what happens. I think Raj and I just hope that we can steal this series, but you know, we know it's a serious uphill climb. But as always, whether you're listening to this now or you're listening to this at a different time of day, we hope you have a wonderful day. We hope the Lakers win. And if nothing else, we'll see you in the next one. Take it easy.